When Joel Rinsema and Cantori of Denver decided it was time to put out their very first recording, they decided to team up with a living composer, and it turned out to be a pretty fabulous experience. Their first recording is called Infinity, and it celebrates the works of Kim Andre Arneson. That's the topic for this week's edition of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. I'm talking with Joel Rinsema, the artistic director and the conductor of Cantori of Denver. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Julie.
So you have been with Cantori now since 2014, and before that you spent 23 years with the Phoenix Chorale. Actually, your time, I think, overlapped with these two ensembles. Are you still working with Phoenix in some way?
No, actually, a couple of years ago, I decided to move to Denver and commit all of my energies to Cantori. I had been, as you said, with Phoenix Chorale for 23 years, and there had kind of worn every single hat possible with the organization. I came on board as a singer first, then Charles Bruffy took over, and about the same time, I started wearing a different hat, not only as a singer, but as executive director. So I kind of ran the business of the Phoenix Chorale, which I did until I left just a couple of years ago. At the same time, I also took over as Charles Bruffy's assistant conductor, and was pleased to serve in that capacity for, I believe, 17 of the last final years there with Phoenix Chorale.
So when you're working with this ensemble, Cantori, how is this similar or different from what you were doing with the Phoenix Chorale?
Well, Phoenix Chorale is a smaller ensemble. It's, I guess, what you would consider a chamber ensemble. When I first started, it was 24 members in size, and by the time I left, it was 28. But it kind of limited the kind of repertoire you could perform. You were very stretched to do pieces that had more Debussy than maybe two per voice part. So we would rarely do things for double choir or things like that. With Cantori, it just opens up some wonderful opportunities to do some more expanded work with more Debussy in the voice parts and some larger works. In Phoenix, all of the singers there were paid for their services. They're one of the very few professional choirs in the U.S., fully professional choirs. And in Cantori, I have a wonderful group of volunteer singers. While they are volunteers, a lot of them have extensive backgrounds in singing choral music. They've studied music. A lot of them are teachers and lead music in worship places and are private voice instructors. And so in that way, it's a very similar talent pool in both choirs, Phoenix Chorale and Cantori.
What is your goal with this ensemble? Is there a certain sound that you're going for or a mission that you're hoping to accomplish?
Cantori's had quite a successful run over the last 20 years. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary season last year. And they've performed for a lot of the national choral conventions, national ACDA conventions, regional, etc. They haven't, however, done a lot of recording. And that is one thing that, in speaking with their board of directors when I first came on board, they really wanted to add as part of their activities. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I was appealing to them, because of my experience in recording and working with composers and developing recordings. I had quite an extensive experience in Phoenix working with composer Ole Yalo in putting together the Northern Lights CD that the Phoenix Chorale recorded successfully. And so I think that was very appealing to Cantori. And so that's part of the new mission of Cantori, is to actively record. And this Kim Arneson project was just one of what I hope will be many to follow.
So is this your first project with Cantori then?
It is. It is. When I first came, I kind of wanted to get settled with the singers of Cantori and get to know them and what they could do musically and vocally. And after only a year's time, I thought, well, you know what? This is moving much faster than I thought it would, but let's get into the studio. Let's do some recording. Of course, then the question was, well, what do we record? It happened about that time that I literally stumbled across Kim Arneson on, of all places, YouTube. I heard Anton Armstrong's recording of Even When He Is Silent that the St. Olaf Choir performed as part of the St. Olaf Festival in Trondheim, Norway. And I just fell in love with the piece, and I thought, I need to get to know more of Kim Arneson and his music. And so I simply reached out to Kim via email and said, send me some more stuff.
Well, then he was your composer in residence for a year, about 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, for our 2015-16 season, after I reached out to Kim and said, show me some more of your stuff, he did. And just piece after piece, I loved his approach to writing choral music, his melodies, the way he set his text to his music, that I said to Kim, what would it take for you to come out to Denver and spend some time with us? And before you knew it, we had entered into agreement that he would come out to Denver and spend some time with us. And not only that, but he would write a bunch of pieces for us. And so that was the beginning of this project, Infinity.
How many of the pieces that he wrote while he was your composer in residence appear on this recording? I know I've seen two for sure.
Four of the tracks on this recording were commissioned and written specifically for Cantorai. What's really interesting is that all four of the pieces were commissioned by members of Cantorai.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm not sure that I have heard that before. Is that common?
I don't know how common it is. I know that as part of the business side of things, when you go to commission a composer, you try to find the funds to help cover that commission. And so we opened it up to our family here in Cantorai and said, who would be interested in being a part of making new art? And several of our members said, I would. And so they were able to help finance the commissioning of these pieces.
The pieces that you all commissioned, are they look like they're some of the world premieres that appear in this release.
They are indeed. It was very important to us at Cantorai that in bringing this new art to life, that we kind of had the first opportunity to do the world premiere recording. Also, in our partnership with Naxos, Naxos is known for wanting to champion new works and new composers, and so it was important that as we approached Naxos to be our partner in this recording, that we had some of those premieres.
Well, I know the title track is one of those pieces, Infinity. Let's talk about that, which explores kind of the challenge of the human condition.
It does indeed. This the text for Infinity was by the English poet David Roberts. I reached out to David kind of after the fact, to be honest with you, about what his inspiration behind this text was. And he shared with me that from his teenage years on, he would look up into the sky and see the stars, and he would think about how long that light took to travel to get to his eyes. And more than anything, he became aware of the mystery and vastness of the universe. And with that vastness, it was clear to David that we play such an astonishingly small part for such a small period of time. But yet, what great responsibility it is for all of us for the caretaking of the world we live in.
There's another piece on this recording, Making or Breaking, another world premiere, and it features saxophone as well as solo soprano and chorus. Is that an unusual combination?
You know, for me, it's not, only because back in my Phoenix days, Ola Yalo wrote a piece for our recording called Evening Prayer, which featured choir and saxophone. So when Kim came to me and said, I'd really like to write a piece for choir and saxophone, I said, okay. whereas some of the other choir members and those involved in the project were a little bit more wary than I was. And I said, oh, it'll be great. Well, we found a great saxophone player in John Gunther, and part of the magic about this piece is that while Kim kind of gave a rough guideline as to what John was to play, it was very improvisational in the recording session. And so what he laid down in the recording session was completely different than what our local audiences had heard in performance.
And it's based on a poem that was inspired by the first pictures of Earth taken from space, but there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think David Roberts, again, the poet for this piece, likes to look at the sky a lot, or at least the stars. Yeah, Making or Breaking was inspired by the first pictures of Earth taken from space, but also pictures of the refugee crisis here in America and around the world. And it talks about what great responsibility we all hold for the care of each other and of the world, and that it is ours for the making or the breaking.
The recording opens with the piece of music that you first discovered by Kim André Arnesen, Even When He Is Silent. This is a really powerful piece, just in listening to it, but the text is really powerful as well. Would you talk a little bit about the text and how it is represented in this piece of music?
You know, this is one of those pieces that is incredibly powerful in its simplicity. It's a three-line poem. I believe in the sun, even when it's not shining. I believe in love, even when I feel it not. And then I believe in God, even when he is silent. Kim sets this almost as a hymn, but it's so much more powerful than a hymn that you might sing in church on a Sunday morning. He takes this simplistic text and over about 4 minutes just explores the entire range of the voice, adds texture through the harmony, and it just really brings the power, the simplistic power of this text to life.
Where did he find the text?
Well, there are stories out there, and I guess that's all we can go by, that this text was written on the wall of a concentration camp. And that just goes to show you the power of this text, if it was truly just someone scribbling, carving out on a wall their deepest thoughts, or if it was a made-up story. I've heard both. But whatever, the words themselves, now no matter what your belief system is, that one can experience the horror of something to the magnitude of the Holocaust and have such hope left in them that they scribble these words on a wall is beyond powerful to me. I don't have the words for that. But the hope that is carried in these words when facing something like that.
There are two pieces on this recording that have a connection to Minnesota. One is called Flight, and it was a gift to Anton Armstrong to mark his 25th anniversary as the conductor of the St. Olaf Choir. And I know you have a few St. Olaf grads in Cantorai as well.
Yes, I believe we have 7 of them currently singing in Cantorai. In fact, a number of them were founding members of Cantorai. And Anton is just, I consider him a colleague, a friend, and a mentor, not just to me, but to the entire American choral world. Anton's done such wonderful things for the choral art form not only in Minnesota, but around the country and the globe. And it was our joy to sing this celebratory song that was written in honor of his 25th anniversary at St. Olaf College.
What do you like about that piece? Why did you choose to have it on this recording?
Well, Kim turns to one of his favorite poets and librettists in Ewan Tate. Ewan is a Welsh composer who Kim has forged a very strong relationship with. It's always very interesting when composers find that right person that they love to set their texts, and Ewan has been that person for Kim. And, you know, with Flight Song, it's kind of a curious title, but yet he ends the entire poem, the last two phrases of the last two paragraphs, talking about flying and taking flight. And I think that Kim sets that in such a... You don't hear birds flapping, but you certainly hear the music swell and rise with those phrases.
There's another piece on this recording which is dedicated to the memory of Stephen Paulus called Child of Song. Tell me about this work and the meaning behind it, as well as why it was written for Stephen Paulus.
I had the opportunity on several occasions to meet Stephen. I believe it was his mother lived in Phoenix or in Tucson, I believe, and Stephen would come through Phoenix a couple times a year, and I just always treasured our opportunities to get together and just have lunch and really not talk about anything specific, but just kind of goodness and music and how those were intertwined. And so when I saw that Kim had dedicated this piece, Child of Song, to the memory of Stephen Paulus, I knew that I just had to perform it. It was commissioned as part of the 40th anniversary celebrations of the American Composers Forum, of which Stephen Paulus was a founding member, and was premiered by Philip Brunel and Vocal Essence. And so the piece had had some success already, but was, I felt, it wasn't well known quite yet. And so that's another reason that I wanted to bring this piece to light in this recording. And I just love the text that Ewan Tate wrote. Again, what a wonderful collaboration it is with Kim Arneson and Ewan Tate. Child of song, your music sang from the bone, the music of a visceral dancer. And then he finishes off the poem with, no child of song falls into silence, but into love's rest.
There are a couple of lullabies on this recording. One that's especially beautiful, I think, is called Dormi Jesu, and it opens with a beautiful soprano solo.
Yeah, one of only a couple pieces that are not in English. This one is the traditional Latin, Dormi Jesu. And I love this text too. It is a lullaby, but it talks about wooing the child to sleep, rocking the child, the baby child, to sleep. And if not, the mother's gonna be a wreck. I think the actual translation, or the one of the translations is, if the child does not sleep, the mother mourns. And so it is a very soothing melody. It does have two gorgeous solo sopranos featured in it. Our soloists are Julianne Dowell and Sarah Michael, and it's just this gorgeous interplay between the two soprano voices, and then with the choir just kind of murmuring underneath, setting up this kind of rocking of the cradle.
Joel, is there a piece on this recording that holds a special personal meaning for you?
You know, I have to say that probably our closing track is the one that I keep on going back to. There We Shall Rest. It's an old text by St. Augustine of Hippo from the early 5th century. Kim has set this text so that it's almost a mini requiem, a song for the dead. And there's a peacefulness, again, that I thought was fitting for the end of this recording. After all the hard work that had gone into this recording, what better way to finish this project than the text, "There We Shall Rest." And the rest of the text is, "And we shall see and love and praise. For what other end do we have, if not to reach the kingdom which has no end?" This was another piece that was commissioned by one of our choir members in memory of his grandmother. And it has special meaning for all of us in Canterai, that it was a true partnership between Kim, one of our choir members, myself, and it's just a great punctuation to this first of our what will be many projects.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. Next time, we'll hear Vivaldi revived on period instruments with Rachel Podger and her ensemble Brecken Baroque. I'm Julie Amacher, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.